The War on Waste Innovation Encyclopedia, Chapter 2, Part 3.
Wow and strategy. We observe that there's a very real link between wow and a major strategy change in just about every one of our engagements. It was not immediately clear to us why this happened. Then we went back to the basics of wow. It starts with understanding what we mean when we say value added. Then we look at wastes as anything that doesn't add value to the product process. But how this related to strategy required a major link, and that came from Michael Porter's treatise on strategy, in which he defines strategy as any number of value propositions. So when you go back here to find the following logic, the waste is anything is in the process that is not value added. And wow is the program that looks at this. Strategy is the value added proposition to the market. And so wow looks at the efficacy of strategy from the bottom of the organization. So what does this mean? For one, looking at where value-added products or services are being delivered, monitor strategy. This is not our normal concept of how you run a business and track strategy. It is almost counterintuitive. It says that by keeping the monitoring of strategy in the hands of the super-educated MBAs, you are missing the boat. In other words, if you want a successful strategy, you need to involve those on the front lines of where the value-added service or product is being delivered or created. I have a subtitle in my book, The Tribal Knowledge Paradox, or The War on Waste Paradox, that reads something like this. Using the War on Waste to align strategy with process. And that is a major thing of what War on Waste is all about. A view. A view is what you see. In War on Waste words, the view of a CEO is what he sees in his customers, suppliers, employees, and business processes. And the view is a two-way exchange. If the customer has a different view, a negative one of the company, then the CEO cannot have a clear view. The CEO with a foggy view of customers may not see all of the untapped opportunities and may miss opportunities to participate with the customer in new product designs that our competitors are locking up. A friend of mine, Neil Klein, showed me a neat way to look at this. His theory is that when you introduce a new product, it is really an article of faith. There is no guarantee that anyone will want it. Surveys can help poll the market, but prior to launch, the new product is an intangible. It is a series of assumptions that you believe, not know, that you can sell profitably to the someone else. In this frame of reference, your products and services are defined by the perceptions of your customers. So he creates a 2x2 box. Customer perception, low and high. Internal company perception, low and high. If your customer perception is high and your internal company perception is high, then you have heaven on earth, in Neil's term. If it's high in the internal customer perception but low in the customer perception, then that's fool's paradise, and so forth. Low internal company perception and low customer perception is cancer within the organization. And finally, if it's low internal company perception but high in customer perception, that's hell on earth. In the box above, which you can see in our book, ideally your customers and company staff will have high perceptions of your product or service. If you follow the figure, you can see life is miserable for any business when both the customers and the company's internal personnel have a negative or low opinion of the product. So when you take simple surveys and they show you squarely in the hell on earth area, you need to do something. You have to accept numbers and do something about them. They're probably not lying. It is a time when reporting honest data with no blame is critical. The bold leader does these little surveys because they are usually accurate and can be very often be used to save a company from a dramatic catastrophe in quarterly earnings. But haste is absolutely a must. To avoid these negative situations, if CEOs just took time to look, they could see the possibility of generating another 30% in sales by spending time with current customers and understanding what they want or where suppliers need to be to win more business. The CEO needs to get out and talk to those top 5% of the customers who account for 67% of the revenues. This is our 5-67 rule. In the new economy, if you don't have a clear view, you will lose these key customers. If you ask a CEO about his top 10 customers and try to get an accurate assessment of how they are doing, the customers typically have one view and the CEO another, what leads to a survey with results in the lower left quadrant of the figure. In one War on Waste project, the CEO was quite pleased with the 90% on-time shipment to his customers. Since his top 10% of the customers accounted for 80% of his business, they were guaranteed to have at least one late shipment each week. This CEO did not have a clear view that matched his customers' expectations. One of the employees, the janitor, was shocked when he learned about their on-time record. He couldn't understand how they could have any customers if they didn't ship orders on time. The CEO was disturbed when this particular employee made that comment. The employee had a less than sterling character with his off-work activity. The CEO wasn't mad at the employee, he just realized that if this person thought he was bad, he was really bad. Within the framework of the War on Waste, the CEO didn't bite the employee's head off for speaking up. This employee spoke his mind and it hit home. Most CEOs have one view of their employees before they begin the War on Waste, but that view can change. Recall Mark Twain's comment. When I was 17, my father was not a very smart man. It was amazing how much he had learned over the 4 years when I finally returned home at 21. In fact, most employees don't change during the War on Waste as much as the CEO does. The major benefit of the process is that both the CEO and the employees can engage in problem solving based on each other's increased awareness of the other's value to the company. One particular CEO in our experiment was a very bright guy. He was rarely necessary to say anything twice to him. He really got it. And even though he is a highly educated MBA, one day he was complaining about how slow everyone was in getting things done. As luck would have it, he was giving directions to one of his employees, and it was obvious that his instructions weren't precise. In other words, his employee didn't really understand him. On top of that, he was dealing with a Russian immigrant whose English was only passable. As the communication progressed, it was clear that the programmer was going to run off and write what he thought he had been instructed to do, different, of course, from the instructions he was being given. It was a disaster in the making. I intervened and suggested to the young president to take some time, write down a functional specification of what he really wanted from the engineer, and then review it with him before the engineer started writing a computer program. Although this appeared to be a slowing down process, he could also see the value of the exercise. He knew that if he didn't do this, lots of information would be lost in the communication and the time to complete the project would be extended. So, what does this story tell us? As a CEO or company executive, you need to be aware that you can create a clear view of your employees and business processes if you focus on open communications based on no-blame concepts. If the CEO had blamed his engineer for not being expert enough with English, he could have failed at getting his directive accomplished. A clear view is always a two-way exchange. Another client had a large inventory that wasn't turning over rapidly. The physical size of the fundamental inventory units meant that significant square footage was going to be needed to store all the material in an efficient way. In the War on Waste class, the employees designed some really neat shelf storage ideas. But none of them was good as the idea, which wasn't new, to go to the supplier and work a deal to give him a larger commitment of raw material. If the supplier kept his raw material in the shelves, on his shelves, not the company, the company wouldn't need as many shelves on their premises. This idea was not new, but the CEO's foggy view of the supplier kept this option from view. In the discussion, the supplier agreed to take back some of the unused raw material, which freed up shop floor storage space. An agreement to increase the commitment of raw material was signed, and a weekly delivery of needed raw material was defined, so both sides won. So when the supplier's view is discussed, think about how that relationship can work differently. One of the strategies for zero working capital creation is to reduce inventory or to increase inventory turns while at the same time implementing a just-in-time inventory system. You can't make these kinds of improvements without a clear view of your supplier. And this clarity is readily achieved during the War on Waste. This is the end of part two of the War on Waste Innovation. If you want to find more about the War on Waste, tune in to www.waronwasteacademy.com or email Len Bertain at len@bertain.com. Thank you very much. See you in the next part. Bye-bye.